¿Cansado de no poder ver el contenido que te gusta en las plataformas populares? ¿Cansado de ver anuncios y que utilicen tu información personal para ponerte aún más anuncios? Descarga el navegador Brave y olvídate de eso. Bloquea anuncios, protege tu privacidad y además, si así lo decides, te paga por ver publicidad. Apoya a este y a otros creadores descargando el navegador Brave. Enlace en la descripción. Ya no te pierdas ningún contenido porque no te llegó la notificación. Únete a nuestra comunidad privada de Discord. No te pierdas nada de material en esta y en otras plataformas. Además, disfruta de más secciones y de la conversación con la comunidad. Enlaces en la descripción.
Latin Micto es patrocinado por The Dollhouse.
Ok, vamos a hablar ahora de un tema bastante escabroso y que quisiera no tener que hablar porque voy a tener que corregir varias afirmaciones que he hecho. Y pues cuando hay que corregir, simplemente hay que corregir, no hay que... No hay que tener miedo a equivocarse. Lamentablemente, creo que me equivoqué rotundamente. Pero peor es no aceptar tus errores, como ciertas personas y personajes que conocemos y que prefieren lo que sea a rectificar. En fin. Pongamos el intro. A ver, dejen. Tengo que arreglar algo aquí. Me di cuenta que no está bien configurado. Muy bien. Vamos. Reino Unido, un hombre asesina a 5 personas y luego se quita la vida en Plymouth. ¿Recuerdan esos coches? Era una marca, Plymouth. No sé si recuerdan. Digo, ya no se comercializan, que yo sepa, cuando menos en México. Creo que aún continúan en Estados Unidos, tal vez estoy mal. ¿Quién sabe? Tal vez Mikto Monger lo conozca o lo sepa. Bueno, total. Tras 11 años sin experimentar un tiroteo masivo, el Reino Unido reportó durante la tarde del jueves un incidente grave con arma de fuego. Y ustedes no lo saben, pero sí saben. Ustedes no lo saben, pero sí saben. ¿Y saben lo que no saben o no saben lo que no saben? Bueno, el punto de todo esto es que en el Reino Unido es extremadamente difícil conseguir un arma de fuego, a solamente que seas musulmán y la contrabandies. Entonces, por esto, esto parece algo bastante destacado por este tipo de cuestiones, ya que hasta las cucharas, escúchenlo bien, las cucharas están baneadas y contabilizadas en el Reino Unido. Pero bueno, tras 11 años sin experimentar un tiroteo masivo, el Reino Unido reportó durante la tarde del jueves un incidente grave con arma de fuego que resultó en la muerte de 6 personas, entre ellas el homicida, quien se suicidó. El suceso ocurrió en la ciudad de Plymouth, ubicada en el condado de Devon, Inglaterra, donde la policía local detalló que las víctimas están compuestas por 2 mujeres y 3 hombres, incluidos un menor de edad. El asesino tan solo tenía 22 años y se llamaba Jake Davison. Y según lo que se sabe hasta ahora, había publicado un video en la plataforma de YouTube en el que dijo que padecía de depresión por no tener sexo en su adolescencia. Sin embargo, la policía no ha anunciado la causa oficial del lamentable tiroteo masivo. Las autoridades dijeron que este incidente no se vincula con actividades de terrorismo. Este hecho sorprende a la población británica, pues Reino Unido tenía 11 años sin ser escenario de un tiroteo de esa magnitud. De igual manera, lo dicho por la agencia Reuters, la nación posee uno de los índices más ínfimos del mundo en homicidios por arma de fuego. Pero ¿qué tal los de por machetazos? Digo, no creo que el Reino Unido esté peor que México en eso de los machetazos, pero pues digamos que puede estar muy alto para un país del primer mundo. Reacciones. Luego del tiroteo, Priti Patel, secretaria de Estado del Interior del Reino Unido, expresó su conmoción a través de su cuenta de Twitter, además de comunicar su apoyo a los afectados. El incidente en Plymouth es impactante y mis pensamientos están con los afectados. Insto a todos para que mantengan la calma, sigan los consejos de la policía y permitan que nuestros servicios de emergencia continúen con su trabajo, dijo la portavoz. Por su parte, Boris Johnson, primer ministro británico, comunicó su pesar a los familiares de las víctimas y envió agradecimientos a los cuerpos de respuesta y servicios de emergencia. Bueno, aquí pueden ver a los dos citados y sus tweets. Bueno, ¿qué es lo interesante de todo esto? Que tenemos ahora un... Pues, ¿cuántos van? Todos sabemos que hay dos incidentes que han sido extremadamente de renombre. Ya sabemos, Elliot Rodgers y Alec Minassian. De hecho, vamos a hablar de Minassian un poco más... Ahorita vamos a hablar de Minassian un poquito más adelante. Por ahí hubo un chico que también llevó a cabo un tiroteo en un estudio de yoga. Básicamente manifestó las mismas inconformidades. Y ahora tenemos esto en el Reino Unido. Y bueno, no, esto no tiene nada que ver con que la comunidad de los célibes involuntarios estén promocionando esto. Sin embargo, esto yo lo había dicho ya bastante tiempo antes, ¿no? De que toda esa frustración debido a los desequilibrios en el mercado sexual iba a empezar a salir por algún lado por la cantidad de personas. O sea, imagínense. Los que ya dejamos todo esto atrás, o sea, los hombres MGTOW que pertenecen al 80%, o quién sabe si ya sea 82, 85 o 90% de hombres que no caemos en gracia de las mujeres y que nos es bastante complicado mantener una relación estable. Ahora, una cosa es que te sea complicado mantener una relación estable y otra es que te sea complicado o complicadísimo tener una relación de cualquier tipo. Entonces, los hombres que están al fondo del barril y que tienen otro tipo de problemas, incluyendo problemas familiares o ya inclusive problemas fisiológicos o mentales, esto va a aumentar la propensión de este nicho de personas a hacer este tipo de cosas. Y conforme pase el tiempo, vamos a ir viendo estos incidentes cada vez más frecuentes, ¿no? Ok, pero dirás, Latin, pues esto es otra tragedia y pues imagínate, tú eres de México y en México tenemos balaceras... Tenemos incidentes donde hay mucha gente herida, muerta y conflictos donde hay actos brutales que no tiene ningún caso que yo les diga qué sucede en ese tipo de enfrentamientos entre grupos criminales, entre ajuste de cuentas y todo ese tipo de cuestiones. Pues bueno. Lo interesante aquí es un video que yo no había visto y que encontré hace poco. Y que quiero que lo vean, que lo veamos juntos, ¿no? También déjenme ir preparando porque lo vamos a ver con subtítulos. Y es que no sé si lo sepan, pero hace no tan poco tiempo, creo que hace un mes o dos, o tal vez un poco más, la policía liberó el video del interrogatorio que tuvo la policía con Alec Minassian. Y es bastante interesante lo que sucede ahí. Así que no vamos a ver las 3 horas del interrogatorio, sino que vamos a ver un pequeño resumen de las cosas que más que encontré en otro canal, que son bastante relevantes. Y también, si a alguien le interesa, no les voy a poner el enlace directo, pero les voy a poner que sí existe el interrogatorio completo, por si a alguien le interesa ver de qué se trataba, ¿no? Este es del canal... Ah, no, es que este es el interrogatorio completo. Pero el resumen es del canal CBP. Que no recuerdo qué era. Era... No recuerdo de qué era la C. Pero básicamente este es un canal Black Pill anglosajón. Muy interesante y que tiene unas reflexiones bastante buenas. De hecho, lo estoy viendo. Estoy viendo todo su contenido. Es bastante bueno. Pero por el momento eso no nos interesa. Dejen, yo tiro mi avatar. Y vamos viendo con subtítulos.
G'day everybody. In today's video, I am going to be analysing the Alec Manassian police interview. If you watch my channel, you probably know who Alec Manassian is. He's basically known as the Toronto van attacker or the Toronto incel mass killer. He got into a van back in January of 2018, a rental van, and he ran over at least 25 people. And the police interview that you're now about to watch is the interview that took place just a few hours after the attack. Now, the video was not released until just a few weeks ago, actually. It was kept off the record, but now it's been posted, and I'm going to go through the kind of the supercut of the interview and give you my own little analysis of it. Now, if you want to go back and watch the original interview, it goes for almost 3 hours. And if you're not familiar with police interviews, it may seem very difficult to understand, but every little word that comes out of a police prosecutor's mouth, or more accurately, I should say, the police detective's mouth, has a purpose, you know. These police detectives who go in and spend 3 hours talking to a suspect, they often ask a lot of questions that seem almost irrelevant to the actual interview. Like, where did you go to high school? You know, what did you have for breakfast this morning? But each of these questions has a purpose. Usually the initial small talk is to see if the person is going to lie to the detective. The detective already knows what high school Alec Manassian went to. But he's going to say to Alec, so, you know, tell me about high school. Which school did you go to? Every little question that the police detective is going to ask has a purpose. Now, I must advise you, this video, is going to be very low budget. I'm not very low production value. I'm just going to be going through it in real time. It's not going to be the most polished video I ever make. But it's always good to look at these things and draw some conclusions. In fact, there's actually a YouTube channel, JCS Psychology, and he did a more sort of researched and a more sort of analytical sort of breakdown of the video. Mine's just more of a commentary. So let's begin.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Doing good, how are you?
Good. Did you drink water?
Sure.
So much. How are you feeling?
I'm good.
You're feeling okay? My name's Rob Thomas.
Nice to meet you.
Hey, how are you? You doing okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, you probably had better days than this, I guess, eh?
Yeah. Well, I am a little shaken, to be honest.
You're a little shaken?
It's not my usual day, obviously.
Yeah, no, I can appreciate that. Alec. Do you mind if I call you Alec?
Yeah, sure.
What do your friends normally call you?
Alec.
Alec, my name's Rob Thomas. I want you to call me Rob from here on in, okay?
Okay.
Is that okay?
Okay.
Alec, I want you to understand something. I'm a senior detective with the Toronto Police. Do you understand what that means?
Yes.
You know I'm a police officer?
Yes.
Okay. I don't wear a uniform. I wear a suit and tie because of the type of work that I do. But although I'm in a suit and tie, I'm an actual police officer, okay? And I'm one of the senior investigators on this case, okay? I got called in for this specific case because of what's happened and the involvement and everything else that's been going on, okay? Before we get started, I want you to know that we're being videotaped and audiotaped.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
Do you know what I mean by that?
Yes. Everything I see and do is being captured.
Exactly, yeah. On audio and video. Okay? Now, here's what I want to do, Alec. I want to talk to you. Okay? We're going to spend a good deal of time together. Okay?
Okay.
It's important that I talk to you.
Now, one of the first things that you'll notice is that there is nothing separating Alec Manassian and the detective. The desk is kind of off to the side a little bit. This is universal across all police interviews all over the world. They all have the same policy. Make sure that there's nothing separating the police detective and the suspect. If you're a bit like me and you have an academic interest in police psychology or just psychology in general, police interviews are a master tutorial in criminal psychology. Just all of the little tricks that they play to extract information from the suspect. So the first thing we notice is the lack of any type of physical object between the two men. The second thing that we can notice is that Alec is seated between the far wall, sorry, the detective, I should say, sits between Alec and the door, meaning that Alec feels a sense of inability to evacuate himself, extricate himself from the situation. He's put in the corner. There's no light switches or anything that he can adjust. He has no control over the room. These interview rooms are designed in a way where they try and make the person comfortable and uncomfortable at the same time. Notice how the police detective is very polite. Now, this guy, if he feels he's dealing with a different type of psychopath, this detective will be an absolute lion in the interview room if he feels that he can extract information more quickly. Police detectives will very quickly profile who they're dealing with and act accordingly. But this police detective knows instinctively that all he has to do is build rapport and this spurgy nutcase will start to devolve information. Now, the video is going to cut about an hour of preliminary questions at the beginning of the interview, which, like I said, if you go back and watch the complete interview, these questions may seem irrelevant. They might seem superfluous to what the detective really needs. But this detective, he knows that Alec Manassian is guilty of the crime. Alec knows he's guilty of the crime. They know if it goes to trial, even if Alec pleads the fifth or whatever the Canadian equivalent is, the detective knows that he's going to be found guilty, but the problem is an insanity defense or some type of other defense that the police may face from the defense team. Questioning Alec Manassian's culpability, his psychology could be argued by the defense team, rendering him legally incapable of having full responsibility for his actions that day. So the police detective is going to ask questions that prove that Alec Manassian had the mental ability to plan the event. The detective wants to prove that Alec Manassian understands right from wrong. He's basically going to get Alec Manassian to prove that while he may be a spurg, he fully understood what he was doing. The police officer needs to establish motive. What the detective is going to do is remove all avenues that a potential defense team could possibly come up with in order to mitigate Alec Manassian's criminal sentence.
I've done a little bit of reading, and I know a little bit about involuntary
celibacy.
Celibacy, right? So being celibate, involuntarily,
yes.
Celibate.
Yo sé que esto es algo aburrido, o sea, pero aquí viene lo que a mí me parece más importante, ¿no? Y aquí es donde voy a tener que rectificar. Yo les había comentado de que no había pruebas hasta el momento de que algo ligara a tanto a Elliot Roger como a Alec Manassian con la comunidad de solteros involuntarios, ¿sí? Entonces aquí el tema es de que una vez que se libera este material audiovisual Pues chéquense todo lo que va a decir y todo. Ya ven, todo hasta el momento, pues la persona que hace este video está estableciendo todo el contexto, ¿no? Y la situación en la cual se encuentra en este momento Minasia en el momento del interrogatorio. Y verán el... pues no sé cómo decirlo, verán los pensamientos que tiene esta persona. Y es lo que está comentando exactamente Mikto Munger en este momento. Ustedes nunca deben de hablar con la policía. Y eso sigue estando vigente en México. Cuando estás metido en una situación como la de él, tienes que estar con tu abogado y en silencio. Que él maneje la situación porque él sabe cómo funciona el sistema legal. Pero bueno, continuamos. Chéquense nomás el... bueno, ¿para qué les hago spoilers? Continuamos.
But what is that?
That means an celibacy means someone who never performed has a sexual intercourse.
Right.
Involuntary celibacy means this wasn't your choice. You essentially are have been thrown into true forced loneliness and you're unable to lose your virginity.
Right.
This is especially painful for young males.
Right, right, right. That makes sense. When did you first? Sorry. You mentioned this and I forgot. When did you first go on to 4chan?
2014.
And specifically when? In 2014?
May 23, 2014.
How were you able to remember that?
Because I remember that was a very significant day.
Okay. What was that?
That was when Elliot Rodger decided to essentially commit an uprising, a beta uprising, if you will,
right,
against the Chads and the Stacys. It was a beta uprising.
A beta uprising? Okay.
Although he didn't call it a beta uprising at the time. Someone else who was inspired by him by the name of Chris Harper called it a beta uprising sometime in, actually, I believe it was October 1, 2015.
It was Elliot Rodger who was the father.
Basically, the founding forefather of the entire movement.
Right, right. So explain to me this movement. What's this movement about?
It's basically a movement of angry incels, such as myself, who are unable to get laid. Therefore, we want to overthrow the Chads, mm-hmm. which would force the Stacys to be forced to reproduce with the incels.
Right, right. Okay. When you say incels...
involuntary celibate.
Celibate. So that's just a short form for... or for fellas who
can't get laid.
Can't have sex. Right? Okay. And what happened in the Elliot Rodger uprising? What did he do?
I know he used a gun as well as a vehicle to convert the life status of certain individuals to a death status.
Right.
Only to carry the message that incels can't be oppressed.
And... And then what about Chris Harper Mercer? What did he do?
He used a gun for all of his murders.
And were these fellas active on 4chan?
Yes.
They were. Have you ever communicated with these fellas?
I actually have, as a matter of fact.
Who did you communicate with?
Both of them, actually.
Really?
We discussed our frustrations at society and being unable to get laid. And we were plotting a certain... timed strikes mm-hmm. on society in order to confuse and shake the foundations, just to put all the normies in a state of panic.
Okay, and who would be a normie?
Normie means normal people. That would be anyone who is considered to be normal by the unfair standards of society.
But not the Chads or Stacys.
Chads and Stacys are actually above normies, or at least they think they're above normies.
Of course, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. So is it fair to say you've got Chads and Stacys up here, normies down here, and then you've got celebs who believe that they are being
oppressed?
Incels. Incels. Incels, sorry.
Yes.
Incels who believe they're being suppressed or repressed.
Yes.
And so as a result, even the playing field.
Yes.
They convert the Stacys and Chads from living to dead. And to
so
make
that we come out on us on top.
Yeah, more than... So is there... the targets... Who are the targets... for this uprising be?
All of the alpha males.
All the alpha males, so the Chads?
Yes.
So those are the people that you want to kill?
Yes.
Okay, all right. And who else?
Any
any of the Stacys who do not wish to give their love and affection to the incels.
So they're a target as well?
Yes.
To be killed?
Yes.
Okay, and what about the normies? Normies?
Yes, we don't necessarily wish to kill the normies, but we do wish to subjugate them in order to make them understand that that our type is the more superior one.
Right, right. So when you say subjugate, what do you mean by that?
Meaning either imprison them or put them in a lower position in society.
Okay.
So that they acknowledge the incels or the Pepe the Frog types as the more superior ones.
You're saying things that I'm not familiar with.
Sorry.
What's a Pepe the Frog?
He's a mascot on 4chan.
He's a mascot?
Yes.
Oh, mascot on 4chan.
Yes. I was using a metaphor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he's actually worshipped quite frequently.
Oh, okay. All right. So going back to the conversation with Chris and Elliot, who did you have conversation with first? Let me ask you that.
Elliot.
So how did you learn of Elliot?
Because we private messaged each other on Reddit.
Yeah.
After I saw one of his posts, we just talked about each other, got to know each other, and we found each other very interesting. We both had the same frustrations at society,
right,
despite being separated by distance so far apart.
Right. Did you ever visit him?
No, but I wish I could have.
Yeah, yeah. Did he ever come and visit you?
No, but I wish he did.
Yeah. When specifically did you first contact or have contact with Elliot?
January of 2014.
And when did you stop having communication with him?
As soon as he was deceased.
Okay. So his act, I know, took place in 2014, but I wasn't aware of the exact day. What day was it?
May 23, 2014.
May 23rd. Yeah, you said that. So when did you last speak to him?
May 20.
May 20th. And so what did he tell you?
He told me that he has to go. He is on a very important mission, mm-hmm, and he might not make it back alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what did you say to him?
I kind of had an idea in my head of what he was planning, but I didn't want to think it was true at the time, so I replied and said, I wish you good luck with that.
Right on. Okay, and
yes.
And when did you learn that what he had done?
I saw it on the news later that night.
Later on the 23rd?
Yes.
Okay, and what did you think?
I thought that I came to the understanding that this is the mission that he had to carry out.
Okay, all right. And anything else?
I felt kind of proud of him for his acts of bravery.
Okay, all right. And what about how you started to change your thinking? Was any of that going on?
I was starting to feel radicalized at that time.
You were, okay. And when you say radicalized, what do you mean by that?
Meaning I felt it was time to take action and not just sit on the sidelines and just fester in my own sadness.
Right on, okay, all right. So what takes place next as part of this growing radicalization?
To be honest, the planning didn't occur until about a month ago. Most of it was actually just thinking,
okay,
and daydreaming.
Okay, all right. So the thinking and daydreaming, when did that start?
That started about a month after the rebellion in May of 2014.
Okay, so...
So in June, I started thinking about this stuff.
And then that continued right up till about a month ago?
Yes, which is when I booked the van with the rider,
okay,
in order to use as a tool for rebellion.
Okay, all right. So take me through that process. What was going through your mind, and how was, you know, what were you thinking when you were doing all of this? What was going on?
I was thinking that it was a time that I stood up to the Chads and Stacys.
Okay. And then, so what happened? Tell me what takes place.
So I booked the van.
Yeah.
And then I just simply wait until today,
yep,
and then I go rent the van, and then I drive it, take it downtown to Toronto,
okay,
and I just start using it as a weapon.
Okay, all right. And so when you say that, what do you mean by that?
Meaning the vehicle collided with several pedestrians, some of who are no longer alive as a result.
Right, okay. Okay, and so that's a lot of information. Take me back to a month ago. You said this is when this whole planning started?
Yes.
Okay, so about a month ago, where were you at that point?
I was at Seneca College, and I decided to phone Ryder and book either a truck or a van with them. And they had a 10-foot...
I'm not going to play the part of the interview where the detective goes through all of the minutiae of the actual attack, because it just kind of goes into irrelevant details that don't really give me anything to really analyze. But the detective is going to ask Alec Manassian a very important question.
10 people died here today. 15 people were seriously injured. I think it's important to ask how you feel about that.
I feel like I accomplished my mission.
You feel like you accomplished your mission?
Yes.
Okay. If the families of those people who were murdered and who were injured were in this room right now, what would you say to them?
I honestly don't know what I would say.
Would you apologize?
I honestly don't know.
These questions are so important. They are pretty much the difference between Alec Manassian getting a life sentence with a mandatory minimum of 25 years to serve, which to be fair is pretty unlikely, given that he killed a lot of people. But this is the difference between the possibility of parole and no possibility of parole. And it's also the difference between if he ever does come up for parole when he's an old man, whether or not that parole will be granted. Because in 40 years, 50 years, they will look back upon his answer to this question about whether or not he feels remorseful for what he did. Does he have any empathy for the victims' families? Which, as you can see, he absolutely fails this question. I mean, anybody with a lick of common sense would have immediately asked to speak with a lawyer and not made a single solitary statement from the get-go and let the defense team build a defense. But because of Alec Manassian's lack of criminal record and his obvious Asperger's syndrome, he did not have... He was basically a skinny five-year-old going up against a champion boxer. Like, he just didn't have anywhere near the means to come up with any... That police detective is a professional polygraph detector. He's basically a highly professional detective, and there's nothing Alex could have said to help himself. But at the very least, if he is going to talk to the detective like an idiot, when asked if he feels any sympathy, any empathy, does he regret what he did, he should have at least pretended to feel some empathy, some sympathy, because ultimately, the criminal justice system in Canada, which is a very common sense criminal justice system, popular with Commonwealth countries, very heavily focused on rehabilitation, etc., etc., they have a very strict number of guidelines that determines whether or not a person be kept behind bars as long as legally possible, or if they're going to follow the standard rehabilitation program. If he's deemed to be a pure psychopath, incapable of remorse, then he's never going to be paroled. And of course he gives the worst possible answer. And the police detective who's asking him these questions, he must have just been looking at this guy being like, you fucking idiot, man. He must have just been looking at Alec and thinking to himself, this man is never, ever, ever going to be out of police custody. Like, he's probably looking at Alec and thinking, you know, you're never, ever, ever going to step foot inside of a normal motor vehicle. The only vehicle you're ever going to be sitting inside ever again is going to be a police van. One of the things I wanted to point out is that typically amongst the incel circles, it's always been Elliot Rodger who was the kind of poster child for incels. He was the person that everybody sympathized with. Even non-neurotypical normies would somewhat sympathize with Elliot Rodger, guys like me who could at least see what could have been. You know, I think to myself, because I was a loser in high school, you know, and I look at Elliot Rodger and I think to myself, had things continued the way they'd continued, if I hadn't have gone to university and, you know, had some success with girls, I could have easily been like ER. And I think a lot of people read Elliot Rodger's manifesto and they saw kind of the worst parts of themselves in Elliot Rodger. Like, nobody nobody in the West can really empathize with the 9/11 attackers, you know, being radicalized by Islam. It's just, it's a different mentality. But to be radicalized against the people that you are attracted to because they have rejected you your whole life, it's something that a lot of men can easily relate to. But with Alec Manassian, because unlike Elliot Rodger, there was no manifesto, there was no window into his soul, he was considered kind of just a news story. He was a side note amongst the incels. But I think this interview, it gives you a little bit more of a window into his soul. You know, when you, it's so surreal listening to him and the detective talk about Pepe the Frog, but ultimately it humanizes him to a certain degree. And I hate to say it, but the proliferation of Alec Manassian's interview, it actually serves to radicalize incels even more. There is a video on YouTube, Never Talk to the Police, and it's a video that should be shown in every high school around the world. And make sure, if you do go and watch it, also watch part two, which is preached from the perspective of a police officer who decides to be completely honest with the public here. Do not talk to me, he says. You know, I am going to convict you if you open your mouth. In fact, there was a comment on the video. Someone said that they have a friend who's a police, prison guard. And when this person said to his friend, who's a prison guard, what are most of the people in prison doing time for? The prison guard responded, talking. You should never, ever, ever speak to the police under any circumstances, even if you are innocent, which Alec Manassian was far from innocent. Even if you are guilty and plan to plead guilty, do not talk to the police. Let your defense team deal with it. They could get you some leverage, okay? They could prove a certain mental perspective if there's nothing to prove that you were mentally culpable for what you did. There are so many defenses. You never, ever talk to the police. During the interview with the detective, Alec Manassian claims that he intended to die that day by suicide by the police. In other words, he deliberately acted dangerously, pointing his wallet at the police as if to confuse them that he was armed and going to shoot the police. So the police would shoot him, and that way he wouldn't be faced with the prospect of spending his life in prison. The detective did not have time to accurately review all of the footage of the suspect being arrested, but if he had, he would have pointed out that Alec actually pointed his wallet at the police officer when the police officer had already determined that Alec was not a threat to the officers. Even in Canada, where police shootings are not quite as prevalent as in the United States, the police officers are still trained to recognize when someone is trying to commit suicide by pointing a gun or acting dangerously in front of the police. And the police officers could clearly see that that's what he was intending to do, and they weren't buying it. Now, I'm actually open to the idea that Alec did genuinely intend to get shot that day, but one of the things that will have come up after the interview is that Alec's behavior was not indicative of a person who was trying to genuinely be killed that day. The detective even said to Alec, "Why did you not purchase a toy gun and make it look more realistic?" And he gave kind of a half-hearted excuse that he didn't want the rental van to search his pockets, which is extremely unlikely. Now, again, I actually think that Alec was just simply not that smart, but it would probably come up during prosecution that Alec could have easily purchased a toy gun and picked it up after he rented out the van. So because the police officer didn't have the footage of the arrest and hadn't had time to analyze it, he didn't really have the ability to really press Alec on this point. But the willingness to die by police suicide demonstrates a lack of evil in the eyes of some jury members. So, like I said, the prosecutor would have wanted to prove during trial that Alec had no intention of experiencing any physical discomfort, especially not dying during the attack. Alrighty, my apologies, everybody.
Okay, no sé ustedes, Pero desde que vi yo ese video, y pienso también ver la entrevista completa, solamente que no he tenido oportunidad. Para aquellos que preguntan qué canal es ese, se llama The CBP Channel. The CBP Channel. Ya lo pueden ver. Ahí pueden encontrar. Digo, muy bueno su contenido. Pero, ok, me cambió mucho de lo que había. De lo que era mi percepción en ese momento de los ataques o de este tipo de personas, pues. O sea, la verdad es que me parecía. Fíjense. Me parecía que esto era demasiado bueno como para ser verdad para, digamos, ciertas fracciones políticas que están buscando ciertos intereses de control en el internet. Entonces, por eso no me lo acababa de creer. Pero, ay, cabrón, o sea, esto es demencial. O sea, jamás me esperé que esto fuera a llegar al grado en el que lo estoy viendo en este momento. O sea, el nivel de autismo que tiene esta persona y la cantidad de tonterías que comete al hablar con la policía, al hacer las afirmaciones que hace, al... No sé, o sea, es la representación de un montón de estereotipos que tienen ciertas fracciones que son opositoras a, pues bueno, a grupos libertarios y conservadores, ¿no? Sobre todo en la escena anglosajona, no tanto en Estados Unidos. Y también por esto que, digo, no sé cómo le voy a poner este fragmento una vez que lo saque, pero... No sé, me... Creo que es aquí donde nosotros, digo, nosotros como divulgadores de la filosofía del hombre libre, de la filosofía MGTOW, pues tenemos que acercarnos un poco más hacia estas personas, no digo que a todos, pero sí cuando menos a la gente que es más propensa a querer escuchar y a querer buscar soluciones para su vida. Porque es lo que siempre he dicho, ¿no? Yo, en los canales de estas personas, lo que he estado viendo es eso, de que hay dos grandes tipos de solteros involuntarios. Están aquellos que encuentran esto como una manera de saber por qué les pasan las cosas que les pasan, y hay otro tipo de personas que simplemente toman la información que les ofrece la Black Pill como un pretexto para tener ciertas actitudes que son bastante nocivas para sí mismos en su vida. Y lo que más me preocupa es que dentro de esos dos grupos de personas puede haber más gente que tenga este grado de problemas. Y digo este grado de problemas, pero... Ya son problemas mentales, personas que están completamente, ¿qué les puedo decir? Están completamente trastornados y que a lo mejor tener una conexión a internet y relacionarse con este tipo de personas es lo peor que puede pasar. Y bueno, cuando menos lo que yo puedo decirles en Latinoamérica es que no veo la situación tan grave. Porque todavía tenemos una sociedad fuerte en cuanto a la identidad y la estructura de familia. Pero en los países anglosajones, esto veo que pues, se ha estado perdiendo de una manera muy, muy fuerte. O sea, yo les puedo decir, pues, de que cuando menos la unión con mi familia es, o la relación que tengo con mi familia es bastante fuerte. Inclusive tener una familia que es conflictiva, pero que con los que te relacionas, o sea, te mantiene estable porque mantienes tus vínculos sociales. Pero estas personas, por su misma condición y el ambiente que se está ejerciendo en los Estados Unidos, las diferentes etnias que viven bajo un mismo sistema, bueno, bajo diferentes sistemas, porque los estados en Estados Unidos es como si fueran micropaíses que tienen diferentes legislaciones, que tienen diferente cultura, que tienen diferente proporción étnica, diferentes culturas. es todo mucho más complicado. Era lo que les comentaba la otra vez, que cuando menos aquí en México hay, ¿qué les puedo decir? Como cuatro, pónganle cuatro o cinco subregiones donde somos ligeramente diferentes, pero hay una uniformidad bastante grande en cuanto a nuestro, en cuanto a nuestros usos y costumbres, nuestra comida, el idioma y todo esto, ¿no? Pero, o sea, y estoy diciendo como cinco regiones, incluyendo, por ejemplo, a los mexicanos que viven en Estados Unidos. O sea, por ejemplo, yo estoy tomando en cuenta a los mexicanos que viven en Estados Unidos, la gente del norte del país, la gente de occidente, la gente del centro y la gente del sur. ¿Sí? Hay como cuatro grandes, cinco identidades, por llamarlo, de México. Pero nuestras diferencias no son tan grandes. Y sabemos que dentro del mestizaje y de nuestra cultura y la historia de nuestro país, podemos vernos muy diferentes, pero compartimos una cierta identidad. O sea, desde el chico que es descendiente de inmigrantes europeos hasta el chico que es descendiente de grupos autóctonos de México. Pero tú a los dos, cuando platicas con la gente, aunque uno sea del norte y otro sea del sur, sabes que son mexicanos. Pero bueno, creo que vamos a dejar hasta aquí este tema, este segmento. Simplemente quería que vieran esta información y que, más que nada, que tengan algo de paciencia y algo de precaución. O sea, no porque vaya a suceder algo, sino tener más precaución en la manera en que se refieren o se acercan a personas que se consideran a sí mismos célibes involuntarios, ¿sí? Por ejemplo, la diferencia de los dos grupos que les digo, sobre todo en la escena hispanohablante, es, por ejemplo, el canal de libertad forzada contra el canal de, no me acuerdo cómo se llamaba este, de Black Pill, no me acuerdo, el Incel Black Pill, algo así se llamaba, o el de Dos Caras, pues, que Dos Caras empezó bien, o sea, o empezó siendo, digamos, bastante abierto a la Red Pill, pero que, pues, últimamente ha caído del lado nihilista de la Black Pill, pues. Pero bueno, vamos a dejar aquí este tema y vamos a lo que sigue, porque no tengo todo el día. Así tengo que cerrar con el outro.
Rough day, huh? Life seems meaningless, huh? Well, you're correct. Its purpose must be chosen by you. Understand that sadness and pain is a natural part of life, but it isn't what life revolves around. Learn to enjoy the ride and seek out beauty in your surroundings. Free your mind. Wake up.